Welcome to the Speakeasy Podcast, part of the Cosmic Shambles Network. I'm your host, Bruce Hood. Each week, I play three fascinating talks delivered by up-and-coming graduate students explaining their research in language that anyone should be able to understand in less than 3 minutes. Why 3 minutes? Well, there are a number of speaking competitions for graduates that have this short format, such as the original 3-Minute Thesis, or 3MT, which came out of the University of Queensland in Australia. Then there's the Thesis in 3, which is in Ireland. And then there's FameLab, which is organized by the Cheltenham Science Festival. But they are all excellent ways of learning something new, and by the way, very quickly, about the cutting edges of research in our universities. It's a bit like an elevator pitch for the super smart, without having to do all the work. These guys have done it for you. So kick back and feast your brain for the next 12 minutes or so on some of the brilliant ideas coming out of our universities, delivered by these excellent communicators. This week, the theme is disasters, or at least research on how to prevent them. Our first speaker is Zeth Janjua from the University of Nottingham. Now, I first met Zeth about 2 years ago at the finals of the UK's 3MT competition that were being held in Manchester, hosted by our partners VITAI, which is the professional organisation that provides continuing professional development for researchers. Originally born in Mumbai, Zeth is pursuing a PhD in civil engineering at the University of Nottingham. This is a recording of his presentation at the UK finals, where Zeth entertained the audience not only in terms of his fascinating research, but also his excellent speaking skills. And because this is audio, you won't be able to see it, his impression of a child spinning around on a roundabout to illustrate the centrifugal forces that he does research on. It'll all become apparent in a moment or two when Zeth tells us about his research on good ice and bad ice and why that's important when you're flying.
Did you know that between 2006 and 2010, in the United States of America alone, 292 flight accidents were listed due to icing? Tragically, in December 2014, 162 members of Air Asia Flight 8501 lost their lives due to icing. So where does all of this ice come from then? The answer lies in the clouds. These clouds are composed of hundreds and thousands of tiny water droplets that are very special because they are composed of liquid water despite being below the freezing temperature. When the aircraft passes through these clouds, it smashes into these droplets, forming two types of ice: good ice and bad ice. Good ice has a lot of air, is easily removable, and when you open your freezers, it's like the ice that you can scrape off from the sides. Bad ice, on the other hand, is very sticky, has no air, and is like an ice cube. This is where I come in. Here at the University of Nottingham, we are working towards developing the world's first smart anti-ice coating. We will test this coating using a spinning device. This device consists of a motor attached to an arm. One end of the arm is a counterweight, while the other end of the arm is a coated steel plate with ice on top. When you switch on the motor, the arm rotates at very, very, very high speeds until the centrifugal force pushes the ice off the plate. This is the same reason why parents in the audience ask their kids to hold on tightly to a merry-go-round while it turns. Because the moment your kids let go, the same centrifugal force pushes them to the ground. Preliminary results have already indicated a drastic reduction in the stickiness of ice. So eventually we hope to reduce energy consumption, prevent in-flight accidents, and reduce carbon dioxide emissions to the atmosphere daily. So the next time, ladies and gentlemen, you pop an ice cube or two into your refreshing summer drinks, I'm sure you'll remember me, Zaid Janjua, and you'll remember this amazing process affecting the way all of us travel around the world.
That was Zaid Janjua from Nottingham University with his 3-minute thesis presentation called On Thin Ice. It was an outstanding performance. I really remember it well because I was one of the judges. And it won the judges' prize, but it also won the audience prize back in 2015 at the finals of the UK 3MT competition that was organised by VTI and held up in Manchester. Now, for the judges' prize, he won £3,000 to spend on public engagement activities. Whereas for the audience prize, which was sponsored by Speakeasy, it was the opportunity to come to London to speak at the Royal Institution at our Speakeasy event that we hold every year in the famous Michael Faraday Lecture Theatre. Now, Zeth told me afterwards that he really appreciated the judges' prize of £3,000. I mean, who wouldn't? But he was much more honoured, being an engineer, to speak in the Michael Faraday Lecture Theatre. So much so that when the event eventually came round, his family flew over from Mumbai especially to hear him. It was a great evening. Now, we're constantly reminded that flying is the safest form of transport, but you may not be so convinced after listening to our next speaker, Ronak Janani from Sheffield Hallam University. Now, she's another engineer, and she's addressing a really frightening problem. Do you remember that issue that Samsung had last year with their Galaxy S7 phones catching fire? So much so that they actually had to withdraw the whole batch? Well, it turns out it isn't just Samsung, but rather all phones which have batteries, because within them is something which is a potential hazard, which can have very dire consequences, as Ronak explains in her presentation.
Did you know that every one of you are carrying a very dangerous material inside your pocket? That material rests inside the battery of your phone. It's called electrolyte, and its job is to provide connection between the positive and the negative electrode. Unfortunately, almost 100% of commercially available batteries and other forms of energy storage devices use extremely toxic and flammable liquid electrolytes. And it was due to this flammable nature that a plane caught on fire on January 7th, 2013 in Boston Airport. That incident was a wake-up call for all manufacturers to stop using these materials and move on to something safer. But safe wouldn't be enough. We need to make sure that no electrolyte can leak outside of our device. And that is exactly why my PhD focuses on safe, solid, and strong electrolytes. Because by transforming these materials into solid form, not only we can eliminate the possibility of leakage, but we can create devices that last for a longer period of time and are more compact in size. My name is Ronak, and I like to think of myself as a chef in laboratory. My favorite recipe is a combination of an eco-friendly and non-flammable liquid electrolyte with silicone and oxygen. After only a couple of hours of mixing these materials together, I end up with a solid electrolyte. But when I first reached this point, I asked myself, have I met my goal? But the answer was no. Although these materials are solid in structure, they are extremely brittle. And that is why for the past 1 year, I investigated how to improve their mechanical strength. Well, the secret ingredient turned out to be organic chemistry. By only adding few organic elements, I was able to transform this brittle structure into this freestanding film. But my PhD doesn't end here. In the next stage, I will transfer this electrolyte into an actual cell and study its performance in different conditions using sophisticated electrochemical techniques. What I'm most interested to know is how it performs in different temperatures and how fast it can be charged or discharged. Ultimately, I hope that my research will be a small but yet effective contribution to the field of energy storage, because I believe that by pushing boundaries of what we need, which is safety, to what our future technology desires, which is solid and strong electrolytes. We can create devices that have longer lifetime or thinner in size and safe both to our environment and ourselves.
That was Ronak Janani from Sheffield Hallam University, who's developing solid forms of electrolytes so that they don't leak in your pocket or catch fire. She calls herself a chef, mixing substances to produce solid-state electrolytes. But there appears to be some way still to go in developing efficient and safe energy storage capacity solutions. Well, that brings me to our last contribution, from Derek van Gelderen of Bristol University, who reminds us of the potential catastrophe when one of our most powerful sources of energy runs into problems.
What if I told you that a company like Areva in France claimed that the likelihood of an incident is once every 1.6 million years? However, in the last 40 years, we've seen three nuclear catastrophes: Three Mile Island, Chernobyl, Fukushima. These catastrophes are what we call low probability events. Now, nobody expects a nuclear meltdown. We as a society understand that planes or trains may well crash, but when it comes to reactors like dams or bridges, it's almost inconceivable. Now, the most critical component of a nuclear power plant is its reactor pressure vessel. Traditionally, they're designed to last 40 years, but since we live in a world motivated by financial gain, it is currently just as uneconomical to completely replace or completely remove our current reactors. And so we're forced to extend their lives by, in Europe, 20 years, and in the US, potentially 40. Three Mile Island was the first case of a loss of coolant accident. So that's when the low-temperature emergency coolant accidentally and rapidly enters the reactor vessel and induces a thermal shock on the steel wall. So think about walking out of a sauna straight into some icy waters. Now, to make matters even more difficult, the longer the steel is subjected to irradiation, the more brittle it becomes. So at the beginning of its life, the steel is ductile. It deforms like a dent in your car. After severe irradiation, it shatters, like dropping a glass on the floor. So how do we predict these low probability events? In a nutshell, breaking a little specimen which fits in my hand will tell me whether a reactor is safe in order to know whether an event like Chernobyl is going to happen. And that is at the same time truly magical, but equally as terrifying. So this is exactly, in fact, how the French have recently discovered that the steel about to be used in their Flamanville reactor was simply not good enough. So my research aimed to evaluate the consequences of a thermal shock on a reactor's structural integrity. And I was able to recreate the effects seen by a reactor in laboratory conditions using the same small specimens. So whilst the consequences of a thermal shock are not desirable for the reactor, it actually provides a benefit to the steel resistance to fracture. However, are there any instances when it does not? The answer is yes. However, again, the question is how probable. It's my firm belief that the results obtained effectively dictate whether or not a reactor can be prolonged and could underpin the existing nuclear safety procedures, thus preventing future catastrophes. But should note that the proof of a low probability does not necessarily signify a proof of safety.
That was Derek van Gelderen from the University of Bristol, painting a rather nightmarish scenario of what happens when you have a nuclear meltdown. His research is contributing to finding diagnostics and ways of building much better nuclear reactors. I don't feel that comfortable with nuclear energy, but it seems inevitable that we need it as part of the way to solve our demands for more and more energy on this planet. But hopefully we should use to more renewable sources and much safer solutions. What is reassuring is that scientists like Derek, indeed the others that we've heard from tonight, are all working on solutions and using science to solve the problems of safer, more efficient energy. I hope this podcast hasn't left you too worried about the potential hazards of modern technology. Certainly we need it, and life is a lot better for it. If you enjoyed any of the speakers on tonight's podcast, then go to the Speakeasy website, where you'll be able to find their pages, and if you want them to talk to your audience or talk to your group, then drop them a line. That's all for now. I've been your host, Bruce Hood. Bye for now. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Speakeasy Podcast, part of the Cosmic Shambles Network, a digital hub for curious minds. head to cosmicshambles.com for more podcasts, documentaries, blogs, and more from the likes of Robin Ince, Josie Long, Helen Chersky, and Brian Cox, and many, many more.